On Point, hosted by Peter Van Aartrijk. Conversations with interesting and informative experts on technology, branding, culture, social media marketing, and other great topics.
Hello again, everybody. I'm Peter Van Aartrijk, your host for On Point, brought to you by our good friends at Wells Media, which includes Carrier Management, Insurance Journal, and other fine publications. This episode is supported by PersonalUmbrella.com, where you can quote standalone personal umbrella policies of up to $5 million in 3 minutes online just by answering four simple questions. Our guest today is Laura Packard, who's a vice president with Aartrijk, so admittedly from the inside here. Laura came to us some years back via one of the largest providers of collector and specialty vehicle coverage in the U.S., an MGA called American Collectors, where she was vice president of sales and marketing. Welcome, Laura.
Well, thanks, Peter. It's great to be talking with you, as always.
Yeah, and like me, Laura is from Jersey, the only state where you don't need to say the new first. Right? Like nobody.
The best state in the whole country. Let's just put it out there.
Yeah, nobody says Hampshire, you know.
I guess you do say Mexico, but
I guess you do say Mexico.
It's a country.
New Jersey is the home of pork roll, which if you're not from Jersey, you probably have no idea what it is. It's hard to explain, but it's wonderful.
It is. We've had many conversations over the past, many decade and a half or so at Ponzio's Diner in Cherry Hill on Route 70. We conceived of some phenomenal ideas over pork roll, so knock it till you try it.
That's right. Well, Laura, you know who I'm a big fan of besides pork roll?
Who's that?
I'm a big fan of the futurist Daniel Burris, and Daniel was a guest on our On Point last year, earlier in 2020, after the pandemic started. But he said recently that, he said, I quote, "We spend the rest of our lives in the future, so doesn't it make sense to plan it rather than just let it unfold in the quote unquote new normal?"
The new normal. Isn't that the truth?
Isn't that the truth? So I think, you know, as we start out the new year, 2021, 2020, it's hard to imagine, you know, a way to describe it. Who could have foreseen a year that was so cool, just to say 2020, I mean, 2020 vision. I remember doing work with a number of trade organizations back in 2000 and 2010, et cetera, when they were talking about 2020. You know, we need a 2020 plan. We want to have perfect vision for the future and all this. who could have thought that year, 2020, would be what it was, you know?
Yeah, let's be glad that's over. It's obviously, made a lasting impression, but I remember sitting in a room with our Aartrijk team back in January planning for the year, and certainly our meeting now would be a little different, knowing what we know. But yeah, 2021, new year, new vision, new experience, relevant experience, and certainly the word for the year, this coming year, is resiliency in my book, because we've kind of walked the talk of resiliency in 2020, and now we get to reap the benefits of it, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really good point. Let's keep that theme in mind as we go through this. So we're going to spend a little time about 2021. Yes, lessons from 2020, but some things about the future that we should be, you know, sort of perennial things we need to keep in mind. One of the enduring trends, Daniel Burris always talks about this thing. It's not either or, it's that and. It's this trend and that trend. So when I asked him last year, again, during that podcast, I said, Dan, like, all these people are talking about working from home. Employees are pushing back really hard. I don't know if they want to go back. And he said, well, it's going to be that and. People working at home and going back to the office. Some will, some won't. It'll be a blend. It'll be a whole new model. So I thought you and I, to start this out, could unpack some of that, to coin another buzzword. But I just feel like the control thing has shifted from the boss man to the employee to the associates, as they're called. I
it really has.
Yeah.
I have a friend here in my neighborhood who here in Houston, which is where I live now. He has a 60-minute. He had, past tense, a 60-minute commute one way to work, which is not an uncommon thing in Houston. And so he's gotten back 2 hours of his life every single day. So he's picked up a woodworking hobby and has turned it into a side gig. And I know his example is certainly not uncommon for people wanting kind of to take back the time they now have.
It's really amazing. I think people say, they say this thing, you know, I'm just not really comfortable going back to the office, you know, and certainly understand that. Who wants to get the coronavirus, right? But I think there's something else going on. I think people are enjoying a little bit of freedom. They're enjoying not having to worry about the time suck of commuting to and from work. They're finding that, you know, firing up the laptop on the back porch is kind of fun. Some of them are wrestling with their kids. And I mean, that's, I don't know how your school superintendent, principal, teacher, parent, you know, all in one, plus keep a job down. So that is a whole nother thing. But it seems to me people are just doing it. They're making it happen.
Yeah, I think 2020 was the year to figure out how to make it happen. And I certainly personally, I experienced that with two small kids in my house as my husband and I were continuing to work. And then 2021 is kind of the year to thrive based on that experience. February of 2020, now full disclosure, Peter, I work from home all the time, which you know. If you had asked me in February what my biggest fear about working from home is, I would have said, oh, you know, I can't stand when I'm on a client call and one of my dogs barks. And now that statement seems just so silly because who cares if a dog barks, you know?
Yeah, right.
So it's just, you know, we figured out what really matters, what doesn't matter in the big picture. It doesn't really matter if I'm sitting at my office it's 8:30 a.m. every single morning. Does it matter if you hear my dog barking? Does it matter if I have a cup of coffee and my hand is resuming? None of those things really matter. What matters is that the work's getting done, that as an employee, my deep human needs, which I know we're going to get into a little bit later, are being met. So that I can, you know, turn that around to clients and make sure their deep human needs are being addressed. That's what matters. So I think 2021 is all about really thriving. Now that we have some experience under our belt in a really trying time, now we can kind of turn it around and see how to just thrive on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we have to get into those things. We have to get into culture as well, managing culture. But I want to get back to what you said about the side gigs, the side hustle. In the U.S. today, I blogged about this, but there are 65 million freelance workers in the U.S. today. By 2027, which is 6 years away, that number will grow to 87 million, which means that most of the workforce will be freelancers. Think about that. Most of the workforce will be freelancers. More than half of them not working for the man. And the other parallel trend to that is that we've known for a long time, independent agents know this because that's a huge chunk of their business, small business. Small business owners drive the economy. There's 31 million in the U.S. today. And I just think it's going to grow. The pandemic is accelerating it, but I think it's also about demographics, Laura. I think workers in their 20s and 30s are more likely, one study said almost 200% more likely to have an aim of creating a side business compared with older generations. It's not just the money for them. It's the sense of where, when, how, and why they work. It's totally different from other generations before them. And I, so you said side hustle. There's these different gigs, but these people put the small and small business ownership, because a lot of them is just, it's just one person. Look at what's going on with food delivery, with catering, with caregivers, with drivers for Uber and Lyft. Apparently, according to one of the insurtechs who are covering these people, one in three Americans will fit those category of gig workers. So this has huge ramifications for the insurance industry, Laura, not just as employers, oh, that's huge in and of itself, but how are they going to insure those people? It's not just doing a standard policy anymore. It's insuring those people. So there's so much going on. The pandemic is driving it too. But I just wonder, and this is just an open question for the two of us, how will insurance organizations, agents, brokers, MGAs, wholesalers, insurance companies, reinsurance companies, how will they manage culture with this employer now, or associate more in charge?
Isn't that a fascinating situation? Well, a couple of things. One, from just an employer standpoint, I think what companies saw this year is that employees were up to the challenge, whatever that challenge was, they were up for it. And in many cases, a lot of people this past year were still just very, very grateful to be employed. And I think perhaps that also led to the shift of what you're talking about, of kind of being in control of your own destiny, figuring out a side gig so that you can take more ownership of your income, rather than being dependent on the man, as you say, for your paycheck every week. But that does lead to a very interesting point about culture. And as the published author in this conversation, I'm curious to know what you have to say about that really interesting shift, because it's just a completely different dynamic. And obviously there are some firms who have had this model for a while, not necessarily in the insurance industry, but, you know, Uber, Lyft, DoorDash, Shipt, you can name one of dozens and dozens of companies who thrive on independent contractors and having to deal with or kind of address how the culture will follow through and how those freelancers or contractors will have an impact on the overall firm's culture. Certainly, you know, Uber has been perhaps not the best example of that in recent years. So from your perspective, what are the important factors that an insurance firm can learn from those kind of more established practices to make sure that they have a really strong foothold on their culture moving forward?
You know, Laura, I think it's still a work in progress. I brought up the gig thing, the freelancer thing, because I think this, the work at home thing, and by the way, when I see WFH, work from home initials, I always see WTF. I don't know why that is, but it just makes me giggle when I see WFH. So it's all related to this kind of employee or associate or worker or person or family or whatever it is, wanting to be in control of their time and however they choose to spend their time. That is why it was so fascinating when social media first came out and we heard people at companies and agencies saying, I don't want my people on Facebook. I don't want my people on Twitter and LinkedIn. I want them working. Well, for them, taking an hour off during the middle of the day to be on LinkedIn, to poke around, hopefully productively, because there's a lot to do there, if you're in commercial lines, for example, to mine new business, is the same time you would have spent as a baby boomer going to a Lions Club or Elks Club or Chamber of Commerce meeting. It's the same. Is it productive? Is it working for you? But it's just a different set of time as opposed to having your ass in a seat for 8 hours, 9 to 5. It's just, they want that control. And this came to light to me, this dichotomy between the old school and the new school. I heard a large broker owner of a large broker say recently, "We don't think we can build culture via work from home," is what he said. Now, there's a lot of people who would agree with that. And before I get into that, I want to say what another agent said very recently on this show on Point in December. He said, "We're having our best year ever, and we're doing it in our pajamas." And that is Spencer Holden, who's an agency owner. His firm is called Erickson Insurance. Now, it's not a large broker. It's a group of, I think it's somewhere between 20 and 30 people. But he had so much advice for people who are wondering, how do you manage culture when the employees want control, when you can't see people? And he was saying that we have a better culture now than before the pandemic because people were sitting in their 6x6 cubicles, really not talking with each other, just hunkered down, staring at their screen, on the phone with customers. And now they're on a couple of hours a day in various Zoom rooms, which is a subset of Zoom, where you can interact. He says, "We're just having a great time." Again, the best year ever. So I think it's different depending on the firm. I think I've heard the Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg say that Zoom and other tools like this aren't quite effective enough to build that culture we need because it's this two-dimensional screen we're staring at. And the next generation of video is going to be much more around the human touch and have it be more real. Maybe that's connected to some of the new technologies coming out with AI and so on. But anyway, what I'm getting at is, to answer your original question, I think it's a work in progress, Laura. I think there's going to be winning firms and losing firms in this whole culture management thing. But I think we've got to Daniel Burris's point, we've got to get ahead of this. And I say, start from the inside before you worry about prospects and customers. Start from the inside. What is your most important asset? It's sure, it's your customer list, but it's your people. And you've got to drill down with them. You have to be very intentional with them and say, how are we going to do this going forward? How are we going to operate? What works for you? Because if it doesn't work for them, it's certainly not going to work for the owner.
What I was interesting is when you were talking about Spencer's example, you mentioned that Erickson Insurance had their best year ever, which one would assume means, you know, from a numbers standpoint. But the examples you all gave were very human examples. And that to me speaks to very strong leadership and very strong culture that likely existed long before COVID started. It's going to be interesting to see companies that had really strong cultures before 2020 versus ones that maybe didn't really pay too much attention to culture and leadership and strategy. Obviously, I think we're going to see the stronger companies continue just to thrive, whether that's a carrier, an insurtech, an association, user group, independent agent, anywhere in the ecosystem. And the ones who perhaps didn't pay attention to those types of things, they're going to need a little help because certainly everyone not being under one roof does pose additional challenges. And I don't think they're insurmountable. I think certainly that's what we do all day, every day is help companies figure that out. So it's certainly something that can be done with strong leadership and paying attention to the important things. But everything I heard you say about Erickson Insurance examples just really speaks to me from a leadership standpoint.
Right. And I think you can also, if you don't know where to start with this, is start with your core values. And if you don't have your core values, then it's time to dust them off. Unfortunately, having to say dust them off is bad because they're supposed to be the most important, employee manual that you can have, just the five statements, five or seven statements that guide employee behavior. And, things that are action statements like challenge the status quo. Well, I would say the pandemic has forced all of us to challenge the status quo, right? How are we going to work? Where are we going to work? When? How do we treat each other? So if you one of your core values is challenge the status quo, what better time, as Spencer has done with Erickson Insurance, to dive in and say, well, how do we challenge this? You know, I asked them, Laura, I said, what about your people? Some people just can't work at home. They can't hack it. There's other people that really enjoy the noise of a Starbucks, you know, for example, which also has changed all of this. They just need to be around people. They just need people. They need separation from their home office. Okay, I get all that. So I asked them that. Well, the first thing he said is, I don't want producers in my office anyway. They should be out and about. So he said that.
Yep.
He said, yeah, there's a subset of people that need to be in the office because they need to be around people. And then he said something really interesting. He goes, those are the people who hop from desk to desk. They're social butterflies. And most other people find them a distraction. And maybe they're not the people you want to have working with you anyway. So that, and in fact, I think he might have said some, I need to listen to the recording again. You think I would remember all of it since I was on it, but he said, I think somebody did leave because they didn't like it. The one thing that really stood out to me is if you can't trust your employees, you shouldn't have hired them in the first place. That is so telling. And it's so reminiscent of the again, I don't mean to be disparaging my generation, the baby boomers, but there's so many times I've heard, I want my people in the office. I want to see them. I want to know they're working. It's partly this trust thing, but it's also partly this generational, got to be in the office, got to work in there, got to, you know, punch in, punch out. It doesn't feel like a good model going forward. What do you think about that?
Oh, you're 100% right. It's a terrible model for moving forward because, to your point, the employees or the individuals who are coming up, they want control. So they want control of their time. The boss man wants control of everything, and that's just a recipe for disaster. So that just doesn't seem like strong leadership. I know it was a generational thing. I know it worked, you know, back in the day, in the older days, but it just doesn't work in 2021. Everybody wants more autonomy. And I think what leaders can learn from is showing more empathy with their teams. And that's really how you talk more about deep human needs and how they're being met. The old school mentality, just it's not going to work moving forward.
Mm-hmm. I really do think if you have a strong culture, again, centered by some core value statements that mean a lot to your people, that are authentic, that come from inside, not from consultants, but they're meaningful to your team, action statements, not stupid things like the customer is always right, but things that I can use in my job. I use challenge the status quo because I love that one. It allows people to raise their hand and ask dumb questions about things that have been done the same way all along. But you know, be happy, be joyful in your work, love what you do. Those kinds of things are important. And so getting back to Spencer for a minute, I asked them, you know, it's great, your 26 people are happy, but you know, what if somebody leaves or you need to hire people? How does that work in a virtual setting? He goes, we just hired a new person. Met her dozens of times via Zoom, asked the same questions, ran her through the same tests. We're still doing mentoring and task shadowing. She goes into a dedicated Zoom room and works with different people throughout the day, and she loves our culture. Again, you know, you can't start from scratch and say, hey, we have a great culture all of a sudden. No, it's something you got to work on. I'm sure Spencer curated it over time. And good on him. But I think this could go on for a while, this whole thing into 21, the pandemic and working virtually or largely working virtually. It could be permanent. So I think it's time, you know, looking down the road, listening to what Daniel Burris says, we got to get ahead of this now. We can't just say, we're going to go back to the office on July 1st. Like, who the hell knows that? This thing was supposed to last 2 months. Then it was
10 days. 10 days.
And it was September 1. I think we'll go back September 1. And all the bosses are like, ooh, this is weird. People aren't listening to me. They're pushing back. This is weird. How about we say January 1? Well, that's not happening either. I've been doing informal polling of our clients and other people I talk with around the industry, and it's not January 1. In fact, my brother who works for MetLife said the buzzword is July 1 is the new January 1. So now it's now
that like 50 is the new 40.
I know this is ridiculous. But Laura, as we wrap up, I want to say thanks for all you do around the insurance industry for clients and friends. And I appreciate your optimism. I think the word is getting ahead. You said resilience. Let's use what we've learned to be resilient in 2020 in the new year, however it shapes up. Lucky for you and I, we're in the insurance industry. It's a resilient, strong industry in and of itself. It always has been. It survived many, many crises. And I feel good about the future. And I'm real excited to see how people are going to evolve from a culture and work standpoint.
I agree. I think that I'm really looking forward to seeing it. I think we have been privileged to see some fantastic things within the insurance marketing space. Among our clients and friends in the industry this past year. And I agree with you, making the theme for this next year all about resiliency and thriving and continuing to be resourceful and building strong cultures and seeing how that affects the industry moving forward. I see great things.
Yeah, and if you do nothing else, don't be paralyzed by what's going on. Get ahead of it. It's not good enough to coast along and wait for the pandemic to end, you know, counting your nickels. I think the companies and insurance organizations that put their foot in the gas and reinvent and create and move forward and communicate and have fun, yes, build the culture along the way, those are the ones who are going to be successful during and after this mess that we're in right now. So that would be my plea, is don't give in to the corporate paralysis. Push back hard and say, we need to do things. We need to put our arms around our people. We need to push forward to help our customers.
And have a strategy. Do it from a place of strategy rather than, you know, an arts and crafts project, which is something you and I talk frequently about. Doing things in a strategic manner is only going to make the strong firm get stronger, and it'll help a faltering firm from failing. So can't talk enough about how important strategy is.
Yep. Well said, Laura. Thank you, Laura, for being with us. And thanks again to our sponsor, personalumbrella.com.
This has been On Point with Peter Van Aartrijk, a podcast presentation of Wells Media Group.